Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome. I'm Robert Crowther with the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, and today we're going to talk about science education. More about the education part than the technical science parts, probably. Joining me is Sarah Chaffee, who is the Program Officer for Education and Public Policy for the Center and deals with these issues daily. Welcome, Sarah.
Glad to be here, Rob.
In addition to what you do at the center working on education policy, you have a background as a debater and a debate coach. Is that right?
That's correct.
With that point of view, you recently wrote an interesting article for Evolution News and Science Today, which, by the way, listeners can find online at evolutionnews.org. But anyway, her piece was looking at why one should teach evolution critically, which is, of course, what Discovery Institute's education policy recommends. And we'll get to that in just a second. But before we do that, I wanted to just ask you, Sarah, if you could tell us a little bit about your background in debate.
Well, I entered the world of debate in 2005 as a shy student. And through many years of competition, both at the high school and college level, I came to love it and started coaching. And now I really enjoy working with kids and helping them to experience that same excitement about debate that I had.
Well, that's great. Debate is certainly an interesting thing to get involved with, officially the way you have. But often when people talk about debate, they think it's just sort of two people arguing with each other. But it really entails a lot more than that. It really entails a lot of critical analysis. And that's why we think it's very interesting in how you approach the point of science education policy from a debate perspective. Why do you think critical analysis is good for science education?
Well, in terms of engaging student interest, just in the idea of education in general, critical analysis invites students to engage more with a topic and to delve into it for themselves. It invites them to research, to persuade their classmates, to articulate a viewpoint in front of others. And this is all much more of a deep learning experience, sort of a, you know, if you're looking at the grammar, logic, rhetoric stage, it's definitely more in the rhetoric stage of learning
right,
than simply looking and reading a textbook and having that be the extent of what you do.
Well, thinking back to when I was in school, I always found those sorts of discussions, if not debate really, but doing the analysis and then discussing it with classmates and teachers and so on, I always found that way more interesting. So it doesn't surprise me too much that other students, you know, are engaged by that, and it's a good way to reach them. As far as students being interested and more interested because of this approach, do you think that that enables them to learn more? Are they going to be more receptive to certain topics?
I really do think it enables students to learn more. I like the part of Discovery Institute's science education policy when it says, Discovery Institute seeks to increase the coverage of evolution in curriculum. Because what happens with critical analysis and critical thinking is you learn a whole lot more about a topic than you would at a cursory level. So you increase knowledge, you increase learning of the students, of whatever topic they're debating. So yes, I definitely think it has the capacity to be a very effective learning tool.
Right. And that's why we've always endorsed this. Like you said, we at Discovery Institute think it's a good idea for students to learn more about evolution, not less. Often we're accused of wanting to pull evolution out of the curriculum or something like that, and it's really not true at all. We want people to examine the issue from both sides or look at all of the factors that are there. I mean, it's like the famous quote from Charles Darwin that we've often used about looking at balancing the facts on and arguments on both sides of each question. And that's what a debate or critical analysis approach does, correct?
That's correct.
So are there other issues that or other benefits that students get from this sort of approach to teaching evolution?
Well, I think that being able to defend your position is important. I had a couple of students the other day. We did a fun debate round on time travel. And suddenly these students were thinking about geopolitics. You know, how would time travel affect global relations? And, you know, they were trying to present convincing arguments on that. And so I really think that trying to persuade other people and having critical analysis gives you this reason to persuade someone else of your position. It makes you delve into other areas. It makes you have to defend your position.
Right. And that's a position that is often attacked, the position of critical analysis, looking at both sides of evolution especially. A lot of critics will say that, well, that's similar to teaching creationism, or that's introducing something else like intelligent design into the classroom. But that's really not what it is. When we talk about critical analysis of evolution, we mean something different than that. Can you explain a little bit what the position of Discovery Institute is specifically?
Yeah, so we think that students should learn more about evolution, not less. They should examine the scientific controversy over evolution by going into such questions as, has science come up with a plausible explanation for the origin of the first life? They should learn about the RNA world scenario. They should learn about the metabolism first scenario, which are two major competing ideas about the origin of life. They should also ask questions like, what does the natural selection random mutation mechanism, the primary mechanism of evolution, do? And be able to see different perspectives that scientists hold on the efficacy of that mechanism. And so this deeper delving into questions and looking at these arguments for themselves is a great way for students to learn evolution. It shouldn't be a sacred dogma. It should be a topic of scientific inquiry.
Right. Now, Jonathan Wells has famously written a lot about the icons of evolution, and these are often presented as evidence for Darwinian evolutionary theory, such as the finch beaks and the Miller-Urey experiment and some of these different things. These are commonly in textbooks today that most kids will encounter in their science classes. Are there textbooks or resources that are available that give the critical analysis of these things and present the evidence on the other side?
Well, if you are a parent, I would strongly urge you to look into this issue first by, you know, reading some of Jonathan Wells' materials, taking a look at maybe your student's textbook and what they are learning right now. And there are other materials available. Materials you can use to educate your student at home. If you're looking at seeing if you can impact your child's particular biology class, their school, their district, we can provide help and advice for that as well.
And that is something that they could find out about at our website. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that is at discovery.org/ID.
Yes.
I want to thank you, Sarah, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for those of you interested, as Sarah mentioned, in science education policy issues, whether it's for your own kids or maybe if you're interested in looking to see what you can do to have a broader impact on the debate about the teaching of evolution, I would encourage you to visit, again, discovery.org/ID. to see exactly what Discovery Institute recommends for the teaching of evolution. And for keeping up with the day-to-day debate over evolution and intelligent design, be sure to visit Evolution News and Science Today at evolutionnews.org. That's evolutionnews.org. For the Center for Science and Culture, I'm Robert Crowther. Thanks for listening.
Most of us take the sunrise for granted, but not scientist Michael Denton. The more he learns about sunlight, the more he stands in awe of it. He reveals why in his newest book, Children of Light, The Astonishing Properties of Sunlight That Make Us Possible. There, he explores the many astonishing coincidences of how sun and air are fine-tuned for creatures like us. As he puts it, altogether these coincidences convey an overwhelming impression of design. Get the book at Amazon now, in paperback or Kindle. Just search for Children of Light Denton. That's Children of Light Denton.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.